We have several important announcements today, but rather than focus on them, let me give an overview of where we are in our transition to living with COVID. And in that process, I'll try to answer a few frequently raised questions. First question is, where are we heading and when will all this be over? Many people have that in your mind. We are heading towards a stage where we strike a balance and an equilibrium with the virus and able to live normally with COVID-19. So you think about this as riding a bicycle downslope. If you do nothing, the bike goes faster and faster until you lose control and the bike will crash. But if we apply the brakes just right, the bike can go down the slope at a steady, controlled speed. So the equivalence of the downslope is the Delta variant and its transmissibility. Left on its own, it has a reproduction rate of 6 to 8. This means for every infected person, he or she can pass to another 6 to 8 persons. It also means that every week, cases do not just double. Cases can increase by 6 to 8 times if you do nothing. That's when it's uncontrollable and the system will crash. That is why we apply brakes on the transmission. And there are three brakes. One, border restrictions so that we don't import large number of infected travelers from overseas. Two, administer vaccines and boosters to our population. And three, domestically apply safe management measures, which currently include measures like group of two and wearing of masks. In particular, vaccines and boosters are very key. They build up antibodies in our society, and as we open up activities, people may get infected and then recover safely. And in that process, it adds further immunity to our population. So as the resistance against the virus increases progressively, at some point, infection number will not go up anymore. It plateaus and then it starts to come down. And that is why we say no transmission wave will last forever, because it is against nature. Then we may relax social restrictions, allow events, gatherings in bigger groups, and yet find that cases do not go up very sharply. It may stay at an acceptable level, probably a few hundred a day, and mainly mild infections. But some may still fall very sick, some may still succumb. No different from living with influenza today. And that is when we can live quite normally with COVID-19. Some safe management measures may still be needed, such as in Europe now, they are still needed. This includes reducing crowding within an enclosed space and wearing of masks indoors. How long will this process take? That's another question. As PM said in his broadcast 2 weeks ago, the process may take 3 to 6 months, and we all hope it will be sooner rather than later. But during this process of transition, we will not stay static, but we relax restrictions and stand down safe management measures whenever we can do so safely. And this is an important part of our transition process. Now let me talk about the three breaks: border controls, vaccines and boosters, safe management measures. And I will address common questions around them. On the first break, border controls. The most common questions I've come across is, why are we reopening borders, yet not allowing larger groups for dining? This is because the break of border control is no longer very relevant. When Singapore has very few cases, or when we had very few cases, and other countries had very high infection rates, we needed border controls to prevent infections from gushing into our borders, through our borders. Now the situation has changed. After going through big transmission waves for many months, the pandemic situations in many countries have stabilized, and their infection rates some of them are even lower than Singapore. So we can open up travel lanes with these countries safely. And further, to make it doubly safe and triply safe, we allow only travelers who are fully vaccinated. And second, require testing, whether pre-departure or on arrival. And this is why imported infection numbers, if you notice, is very low every day. And it's a very small fraction of total community infections. And further, there are many benefits to Singaporeans when we open up our borders. One, Singaporeans can travel for study, for work, or leisure with their family. Second, we can start to bring in much-needed workers to complete our BTO projects, to complete various public infrastructure and other projects that we need. Third, MOM can start allowing in more domestic workers to relieve the stress on many families in Singapore. Hence, we are making a few changes. We are lifting the not-to-land rule for Bangladesh, India, Pakistan, Sri Lanka, Myanmar, and Nepal. The situation in these countries have stabilized for some time, and there is no longer a need for a strict not-to-land rule. Further, MOM will also be increasing the entry of foreign domestic helpers. Today is 200 a week. It will be increased to 1,000 a week. And this will help them to start to clear the backlog of applications from families for domestic helpers. And MOM will review the entry number regularly together with the MTF with a view to try to fulfill the needs of families as quickly and as promptly as possible. And I think these two steps will make life easier for many businesses, for contractors, as well as for families. We have also made some adjustments to the risk categorization of several countries, and this is part of our routine fortnightly review. Details will be in the MTF press release. Let me now talk about the second break, which is vaccination and boosters. Over or around 20,000 individuals are taking their boosters every day, and close to 660,000 individuals have taken their booster shots so far. And we also continue to have a couple more thousand people every day coming forward to take their first dose. Yeah. In terms of eligible population, 94% have either taken or have booked their vaccinations. However, amongst the 6% eligible population who remain unvaccinated are 70,000 seniors above 70 years old or above 60 years old. They are at a high risk of falling very sick if infected with COVID-19. Some of these unvaccinated individuals are unable to take the mRNA vaccines due to medical reasons. Others may just simply prefer a non-mRNA vaccine. So we will make Sinovac vaccine more accessible to them to encourage them to get vaccinated. The Health Sciences Authority has given interim approval to the Sinovac vaccine under the Pandemic Special Access Route, or PISA, similar to the Pfizer-BioNTech and the Moderna vaccines. PISA approval does not automatically mean that the vaccine will come under the National Vaccination Program, or the NVP. But given that there is yet to be a non-mRNA vaccine in the NVP today, MOH has decided to bring the Sinovac vaccine under the NVP. It will be, or the Sinovac CoronaVac vaccine will be for a specific usage, namely for individuals who cannot or do not want to take the mRNA vaccines. The Sinovac vaccine will be administered as a 3-dose vaccine. First dose, after that, second dose will be 28 days later, and third dose will be 90 days later. This 3-dose vaccination regime is in line with the WHO's recent recommendations after taking into account of international data and evidence of the efficacy of 2 doses. For those who have already taken 2 doses, they will still be considered as vaccinated. but will be scheduled to take a third dose 90 days after the second dose. This is because with a three-dose vaccine and the interval between the second and third dose is quite long, 90 days, I think we are making a special provision to allow these individuals to be considered as vaccinated for a limited period, yeah, after their second dose. Details will be in the press release. MOH recognizes that these changes will increase the demand for the Sinovac vaccine doses, and we are in the process of securing more supplies. For the specific usage I just described, the Sinovac vaccine will be administered for free and will come under VIFAP, the Vaccine Injury Financial Assistance Program. However, for some individuals who have taken the Sinovac vaccine before PISA approval was given and have paid for it, we will not be able to reimburse the cost, and we seek your understanding. MOH will also assign the vaccination center at Raffles City to administer the Sinovac vaccine. And this is on top of the 11 private clinics which has been assisting MOH in administering the Sinovac vaccine. And they will now come on the national vaccination program as well. I should clarify two other points. First, we will not be using Sinovac vaccine as boosters for those who have already taken two doses of mRNA vaccines. For these individuals, the expert committee recommends, and MOH agrees, that they should receive either of the mRNA vaccines as boosters. Second point, we will also not use Sinovac vaccine for children below 18. Sinovac's application for PISA and the interim approval granted is based on the vaccine being used for individuals 18 years and above. The manufacturer did not provide safety nor efficacy data of the Sinovac vaccine for children below 18. Notwithstanding, for children between 12 to 17 years of age who may be allergic or develop a side effect to the mRNA vaccine, MOH will be starting a separate dedicated public health program based on their own consent, to enroll them for the Sinovac vaccine. And details will be made to these individuals separately. Let me now talk about the third break, which is our domestic safe management measures. And this attracts the most number of questions. As people feel that the rules do not seem to be consistent across settings. So why a big group is allowed here, but a small group allowed there? Why music is allowed here, but music not allowed there? So on and so forth. And during this pandemic, we understand everyone miss doing something we love, whether it is meeting friends, going to parties, playing sports, or dining out. And we will wonder why it cannot be resumed, especially when we see something else resuming. So why is it that the thing I love to do cannot resume? And businesses too, they want to do business properly and not having to receive financial assistance. We share all these desires, and we will eventually get there. But during the transition, the inconsistencies and then the confusion across settings is a very difficult problem to solve. We know the extreme solutions are easy to understand. Either on one end, a freedom day where all restrictions are removed, or a lockdown where everything is disallowed. Those are very easy to understand, very consistent, but both are not the outcomes nor the solutions we want. So long as we decide we take a middle path between the extremes, we will have to allow some activities but put restrictions on others. And inevitably, this will give rise to comparisons and then perceptions of inconsistencies. But if we are prepared to live with some inconsistencies, then we have a basis to move forward. Some can move forward first, others wait for your turn next. But eventually, everyone will get there. But if we want absolute consistency, it's either Freedom Day or lockdown. And then we may end up not moving forward at all. And if we can be able to take that approach live with some inconsistencies, then we can tackle the real challenge, which is how can we progressively reopen while keeping severe disease incidence rate and death rates as low as possible? And the key there is to protect the vulnerable, because the large majority, 98.7% today, of people infected today have mild or no symptoms. So to protect the vulnerable, the most important aspect is to ensure hospitals not overwhelmed. Then our healthcare workers can do their best to cure people and to save lives. Another important aspect is vaccination differentiated schemes, which is very important. And this will help limit the exposure of unvaccinated individuals, especially seniors, to settings where they could be infected. And if we can do this successfully, protect the vulnerable, then we can progressively open up to those at very low risk, such as vaccinated young people. And we can add testing as a further layer of protection. So these are some of the concepts we need to start thinking about. And Minister Lawrence Wong will be sharing some of these possible ideas. In conclusion, our approach is unique in the world. Most countries take either of the following two approaches, either eradication or living with COVID. We did both. We implemented an eradication strategy last year and a large part of this year when we were not protected by vaccines. A few months ago, after we had vaccinated the large majority of our population, we moved to a living with COVID approach, but do it progressively, step by step, not with a big bang. We see many countries now living life quite normally, with quite a bit of envy. They took a living with COVID approach from the start, went through big waves of transmissions, suffered many deaths. And we need to remember that today, when they live normally with COVID, they paid a big price. For countries such as the US, UK, Italy, Spain, France, the death rates there are about 2,000 deaths per million population. 2,000. For places like Germany, Switzerland, Netherlands, it's about 1,000 deaths per million population. Malaysia, which situation is fast stabilizing, is about 800, over 800. Denmark, about 460. Qatar, UAE, over 200. How about Singapore? We are currently at about 50 deaths per million population. Still rising, but thus far lower, much lower than the rest. So we have so far given our people very strong protection compared to many other countries in the world. But still, we mourn the loss of every life with their families and their loved ones, and we cannot let up the fight. So this is a difficult period as we ride through a big transmission wave. But we are making progress, and we will need to pull through together, taking care and balancing the concerns and the needs of families, of young people, students, healthcare workers, and businesses from different industries. And we thank everyone for your understanding and your support so far.